Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, August 7th, 2023. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Seven critical in Idaho bus accident on U.S. Highway 55 north of Boise. Federal Judge Windmill says he will fast-track Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador's motion to halt Planned Parenthood's legal case against him, in which he issued an opinion that said doctors would be violating the state's new felony abortion law if they refer abortion patients out of state. And we'll have a deep dive into the elimination of the Idaho Maternal Mortality Committee. The legislature sunset the committee and declined to consider legislation that would renew it for another year or more. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Reports. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Seven people are in critical condition at hospitals in the Treasure Valley after a single vehicle bus crash on State Highway 55 north of Banks Friday. 11 people were hospitalized as of today. The bus was carrying about 30 school-age campers and staff back to the Boise area from the Treasure Valley YMCA camp at Horse Thief Reservoir when it overturned on the winding highway about 50 miles north of Boise. An Idaho State Police news release says nearly all of the children have been released to their families. The Associated Press reports St. Luke's Hospital System was caring for multiple injured passengers at its Boise and Meridian hospitals. The Idaho Press reports healthcare workers treated the driver at a hospital and released him. The Idaho State Police news release said troopers are working with the third-party bus vendor to access pertinent information related to the incident and will determine the timeline and crash dynamics. The Treasure Valley YMCA has canceled a camp at Horse Thief Reservoir that was scheduled to begin yesterday. The city of Troy has declared a water emergency after its Twin Creeks well reduced its output. The city's Facebook page says other wells also have decreased capacity. The Facebook page says the city council adopted the emergency resolution Friday. It says a resolution has been adopted by the City Council of Troy, Idaho, declaring an emergency situation due to a potential water shortage caused by the main well known as Twin Creeks Well needing repair. The well is experiencing inadequate pumping and requires essential servicing. As a consequence, the capacity of the city's other wells has decreased, leading to a reduced water supply. This decrease in supply could result in insufficient water pressure, posing significant fire protection issues. To address the issue, the resolution imposes restrictions on outdoor water use for residents, including activities like watering lawns, water play, and washing cars. The sale of bulk water for commercial purposes is also temporarily suspended. Violating these restrictions may result in a misdemeanor and a fine. The resolution will remain in effect and will be rescinded once the well is repaired and the water supply is stabilized.
A new program in Washington State will provide homes to people who are most in need in the region. The project, known as Madrona Highlands in South Snohomish County, will be available for homeless or very low-income families. Beneficial State Bank has made it part of its mission to support affordable housing and is injecting $6 million in loans. Margie Francia is the bank's team lead for affordable housing.
This is something that was a long time coming. It was a partnership with a nonprofit and the local church. And so it's a great example of what can be done when we can work in partnership to help leverage and create these units.
Madrona Highlands will house 52 families. It's a $30 million project with support from the state and county. $13 million is coming through a low-income housing tax credit from the Washington State Housing Finance Commission. Beneficial State Bank has supported the development of 8,400 affordable units along the West Coast, including more than 800 in Washington. Madrona Highlands is a project of Housing Hope, an Everett-based organization that operates affordable housing units in the region and helps people experiencing homelessness. Bobby Thompson with the organization says the state is in the middle of a housing crisis.
For people that don't have the means to an income that can provide the support to kind of get in a unit, it's very hard to find housing in the Puget Sound region.
Washington has the fifth most unaffordable housing costs in the country, according to the National Low Income Housing Coalition. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Farmington State Bank in the tiny northern Whitman County town of Farmington, population 150, has announced it will close soon, and customers' accounts have been sold to the Bank of Eastern Oregon, which has a branch in Colfax. The Farmington State Bank, which has operated out of the same building since 1911, was entangled in the collapse of cryptocurrency trader FTX and the fate of indicted CEO Sam Bankman-Fried. Its roots date back to the Bank of Farmington, which began operations in 1897. The Spokesman Review reports the state awarded the current charter as Farmington State Bank in 1929. French former screenwriter Jean Chalopin purchased the bank in 2020, saying he wanted to have a bank that would support the state's new cannabis industry. Chalopin also founded the Bahama-based Deltec International Group to serve cryptocurrencies. The Spokesman Review reported FTX, the third largest cryptocurrency firm in the world, was a major partner in Deltec. Deltec's top client is Tether, a British Virgin Islands-based cryptocurrency firm, which reportedly had $65 billion in assets. Deltec offered stablecoin, which they say is backed by U.S. dollars. FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried suddenly declared bankruptcy November 11th. FTX's investment arm, Alameda Research, invested $11.5 million in the online-only Moonstone Bank, which was founded by the tiny Farmington State Bank last year. An investigation by the Spokesman Review found the legal counsel for Moonstone Bank, former Washington Department of Financial Institutions Legal and Regulatory Affairs Director Joseph Vincent, until 2021, saw the tiny Farmington Bank's charter as a chance to access the legitimacy of the banking industry for cryptocurrency industries. Vincent wrote before he joined Moonstone, "Right now there is a window of opportunity for which only a few places on earth have the concentration of tech talent and a reputation of world trade that could make them preeminent in both trade finance and international exchange of currency and goods in bank-to-bank payments. The Moonstone Bank ceased to exist earlier this year." Roberta Hollingshead, the Washington Department of Financial Institutions Director of Banks, said late last year the agency was aware of the FTX-affiliated Deltec's $11.5 million investment in Moonstone Bank. She said the $11.5 million is less than 10% of the bank's holdings, so no new layer of regulation was needed addressing the investment. However, it seems much more was invested from the cryptocurrency firms in the Farmington State Bank. Farmington State Bank Business Operations Director Josie Booth told the Spokesman Review after the bank announced its closure, the U.S. Justice Department was trying to find the FTX group of companies' missing assets. Booth said, knowing that they had an investor in us and had just opened an account, they had requested that any bank that had funds to freeze those until the federal agencies could determine what to do with them. In fact, we did. We froze those funds for the benefit of the federal investigators. Ultimately, we turned those over. Booth said the seizure meant the bank's deposits decreased from $98.9 million last fall to $16.3 million in June. There were 32 Farmington State Bank employees as of last year. Now Booth says there are 12, and many of those are working reduced hours. Speaking of the sale to the Bank of Eastern Oregon, Booth said there's a lot of concern that this branch that has been here for so many years is not going to remain open. But this is a win-win scenario. The bank that stepped in to acquire our customers is actually a really good fit. The FDIC is expected to approve the purchase soon.
Seattle Democrat and U.S. Representative Pramila Jayapal is hosting a town hall at the University of Washington today to discuss the negative impacts of trade policies championed by technology companies. Her event coincides with Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation meetings taking place in Seattle this summer. Hillary Hayden is organizing director for the Trade Justice Education Fund and Jayapal's town hall.
She'll be shining a spotlight on the dangerous implications that big tech's digital trade agenda has for personal privacy, for AI discrimination, fair competition, and more in the United States and around the globe.
Along with Jayapal, representatives from the Washington State Labor Council, ACLU Washington, and Washington Fair Trade Coalition will also participate. Hayden says a range of groups have expressed concern about how big technology companies could influence trade talks.
All of those folks are on the same page when it comes to the fact that digital rules being negotiated right now could impact consumers, impact workers, impact civil rights, impact small businesses for decades to come. There's a real stake in us getting the rules right in this moment.
Hayden notes the Indo-Pacific Economic Partnership is part of trade meetings in Seattle right now. She and other groups have raised concern that technology companies are getting privileged access to those talks. The countries in the partnership represent about 40% of the global economy. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedov.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by SkyGlow Solar, offering solar power systems installations on the Palouse and surrounding region. Information at skyglowsolar.com or contact Brian Ogle at 208-310-4545.
KRFP, Moscow.
Federal Judge B. Lynn Windmill said on Friday he will fast-track Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador's motion to halt Planned Parenthood's legal case against Labrador's March opinion, which said doctors would be violating the state's new felony abortion laws if they refer patients across state lines for abortion care. Labrador on Wednesday asked Windmill to put the Planned Parenthood litigation on hold while his appeal goes through. Labrador claimed the attorney general's office would, quote, experience irreparable harm, unquote, if the case moves forward. He also claimed the federal judge in the case does not have jurisdiction. On Friday, Judge Windmill asked both sides in the case to submit further documents. Planned Parenthood, Great Northwest, and two Idaho physicians had sued Labrador, saying he violated the First Amendment and due process laws and the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution with his March 27th legal opinion, saying physician referrals for abortion care across state lines violate Idaho's anti-abortion law. Republican Representative Brent Crane of Nampa had requested the opinion on behalf of the anti-abortion clinic Stanton Healthcare. The opinion by Labrador said abortion pills are included in the state's full-term abortion ban and said health workers who supply them are subject to felony criminal penalties. Windmill granted a preliminary injunction preventing Labrador's office from taking legal action against providers in a 60-page opinion Monday of last week. Judge Windmill gave both parties in the lawsuit 14 days to submit litigation and discovery plans for the next steps in the lawsuit. The Daily News reports Labrador's office argued in their motion to dismiss the case. The March 27th opinion had since been withdrawn due to a procedural issue, so the case should be dismissed. The motion also argued the opinion was meant as private legal advice for only Representative Crane under attorney-client privilege, and it would not threaten medical providers. Planned Parenthood Great Northwest CEO Rebecca Gibran said of Labrador's appeal in an email, he can't claim that he is taking back the contents of the letter with no legal commitment while also appealing the verdict of this case. The fact that he's appealing the verdict at all further proves that our lawsuit was necessary in the first place. He plans on going after our providers. The federally funded Idaho Maternal Mortality Review Committee issued its final report earlier this year examining the deaths of all 17 women in Idaho who died in 2021 while pregnant or within 1 year of being pregnant. The report found 15 of those deaths were preventable. The Idaho legislature effectively disbanded the state's Mortality Review Committee this year, just as Idaho's new abortion laws are taking effect, including one that is being challenged by the U.S. Justice Department because it will likely result in an increase in maternal deaths. Federal Judge B. Lynn Windmill last year issued a preliminary injunction against the part of the abortion trigger law that prohibits emergency room doctors from providing abortion care to women unless the life of the woman is in danger. The law does not make an exception for when the health of the mother is at risk during emergencies that come up during pregnancy. Making that distinction is too precarious for emergency room doctors, and an Idaho Coalition for Safe Reproductive Health Care survey this year found more than half of Idaho's maternal care doctors and maternal health care providers are considering relocating to another state next year. And 73 out of 75 respondents said Idaho's abortion laws are contributing to their consideration of leaving. Two Idaho hospitals have closed their maternity wards this year, and one of them in Bonner County said it was because of Idaho's newly enacted felony abortion laws, which prevent doctors from making decisions for pregnant women in precarious health situations without the threat of felony persecution. The extreme right-wing Idaho Freedom Foundation counts the end of the state's maternal mortality review panel as a win, despite the risk to pregnant women. Idaho Freedom Foundation President Wayne Hoffman, who resides in Spokane County, wrote, "Each year after its formation, the committee released reports arguing for more government, in particular the expansion of Medicaid to include women up to 12 months after the delivery of their babies and prioritizing subsidized housing for women. The panel's demise also means we don't need to be taking money from the Federal Centers for Disease Control to operate it, which is another win. Equally exciting is that the Mortality Review Board's proposal to expand Medicaid to postpartum women also failed to move forward." During an Idaho House Health and Welfare Committee hearing in February on a bill from Republican Representative Dori Healy of Boise to extend the life of the committee indefinitely, Idaho Freedom Foundation lobbyist Fred Birnbaum said the organization is against expanding Medicaid to cover pregnant people for a year after childbirth, regardless of the pregnancy's outcome. Here's Birnbaum, followed by a question from Democratic Representative Elena Rubel of Boise.
"We originally opposed the creation of this committee in 2019 for several reasons, among those that it wasn't necessary. And we predicted then, and you will see now, it exists for the primary purpose of expanding government. You know the old saying, all roads lead to Rome. Well, all government-created committees lead to the call for more government spending. And I want to go to the particulars of the 2020 MMRC report to point that out. Now, there's only 3 years of data, and I think it's important to keep in mind when you heard these numbers that, you know, the deaths are trending high. When you have roughly 22,000 live births and the deaths, I'm going to read the actual years from the report, page 37, the 2020 report. In 2018, there were about 10. In 20 or 10, there were 2019 was 5. And then 2020 was 11. So you're dealing with small numbers in relation to the total number of live births. And it's important to note that 8 of the 11 women that died in 2020 were already Medicaid participants. So I'm not sure what this committee is going to accomplish. 6 of those were pregnant at the time of death. So they're on Medicaid, most of them, 8 of 11, and they're pregnant. So they're already covered by Medicaid. The contributing factors, and this was a question Representative Blanksma asked, and the report's not clear, but this said that contributing factors, 42% had known or likely mental health issues, 35% substance abuse. So how's the committee going to fix these things? Because as Representative Kingsley said, they're repetitive. It's time to sunset the committee. If you turn to pages 5 and 6 and 25 and 26 of the report, you will see an incredibly long list of things they recommend that really have nothing to do with maternity. Thank you, and I'll stand for some questions.
Are there any questions? Representative Rubel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Birnbaum. I guess I just wanted to probe a little bit. Aren't there things maybe that would be appropriate to do beyond simply adding people to Medicaid? Perhaps it might be appropriate for us to explore whether it was lack of awareness of mental health resources or, you know, lack of access, some other questions that may still be pertinent to look into beyond simply adding these people to Medicaid, since, as you note, many of them already were on Medicaid.
Mr. Birnbaum.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rubel, thank you for that question. I guess the short answer is I don't think so, and I'll tell you why. The MMRC has issued three reports, 18, 19, and 20, and the recommendations are repetitive, A, and B, such a long laundry list. I mean, you don't really need a committee to say some of these things. So, of course, they call for the sunsetting of their own committee. They call for expanding coverage to postpartum. They say facilities, systems, and communities should increase access, education, funding. So, I mean, you really don't need a committee to say very obvious things. They also say that subsidized housing programs should prioritize housing for pregnant women. The state of Idaho should increase funding and support for social services. Systems working on substance abuse disorder should educate law enforcement, working with community members. Public health should expand general access to, can't pronounce it, naloxone. And then, again, there's a long list. You could just go to probably any website and just download this list. We don't need this committee. It has an added value. And if the existence of the committee helped, and these women are already on Medicaid, why have we not really seen any trend line changes? In fairness, with the small number of deaths and the only 3 years of data, it would be hard to. But Mr. Chairman and good members of this committee, I think it's time to sunset this committee.
That was Idaho Freedom Foundation lobbyist Fred Birnbaum answering a question from Democratic State Representative Elena Rubel of Boise during a House Health and Welfare Committee hearing February 15th on a bill to continue the work of the 3-year-old State Maternal Mortality Review Panel. Shortly after Birnbaum conceded, he misspoke when he said the committee had recommended its own dissolution. The legislature's failure to renew the Idaho Maternal Mortality Review Committee means Idaho will be one of only two states without its own state-specific Maternal Mortality Review Committee. It also means Idaho is effectively the only state without a Mortality Review Committee at its disposal because the other state without one, Wyoming, is sharing resources with Utah's committee to study maternal mortality. The spokesman review reports the Idaho legislature's failure to renew comes at a time when the state's 5-year average of pregnancy-related deaths increased by 41.8% from the 5-year period between 2003 and 2007 and the 5-year period between 2017 and 2021. In the 4 annual reports from 2017 to 2021, the committee reported the state had an average of 29.2 pregnancy-related deaths per 100,000 live births, which is higher than the 2014 to 2020 national average of 18.6 and higher than Washington's average during the same period of 15.9 pregnancy-related deaths per 100,000 live births per year. The final report for 2021 found the most common contributing factor to the 17 maternal deaths in Idaho that year was lack of knowledge regarding the significance of a health event or need for treatment. The second most common factor was the pregnant woman's lack of financial resources, and the third was factors related to mental health. During the legislative committee hearing on the bill to continue the Maternal Mortality Review Committee this year, bill sponsor Republican Representative Dori Healy of Boise said continuing the committee indefinitely would improve the health of Idaho mothers and their babies, and the cost of the committee would be fully covered by a $10,000 federal grant. Republican Representative Mike Kingsley of Lewiston, who voted in 2019 to create the committee, said the committee had served its purpose and should be allowed to sunset. Kingsley told the Idaho House Health and Welfare Committee this year, "The debate was, we just need 3 years to study this, and then we'll have the numbers, and this will sunset. And that's why we put a sunset clause on it. And I've read the reports, and they all seem to identify the same thing, substance abuse, mental health. So I think this has served its purpose." Idaho Maternal Mortality Review Committee Chair Stacy Seib told lawmakers, "I guess I would like to kind of understand why we don't want to understand our own state. As someone who studies public health, I'm not sure our job ever ends. Right now, we've got 40 deaths that we've looked at over the last 3 years. Is 40 too many? Who gets to decide that?" Here's Dr. Seib.
I'm a physician who has practiced maternal fetal medicine, also known as high-risk obstetrics, in Idaho for over 23 years. I currently serve as the chair for the Idaho Maternal Mortality Review Committee. And I want to say that your committee is asking great questions right now, and I think it's I want to help answer them if I can at all. I grew up in western Kansas and received my medical training there as well at the University of Kansas. I've developed an appreciation for the challenges of providing quality medical care in a predominantly rural state. I believe as a healthcare provider that the core of improving the long-term health of the citizens in our state lies in the providing a healthy start in life. The MMRC serves to provide a window into the needs of the mothers and the families of how we can take care of them. I've been a member of the MMRC since its inception 4 years ago, and I have served as the chair for the last two. And one of the things that I'd like to stop here and clarify out of my sort of prepared notes is, one of the questions is, what is the type of data that we're pulling out of here? Well, by bringing together a multidisciplinary group that utilizes a coroner, medical examiner, public health expertise, emergency medical service providers, the people who are out there on the scenes, licensed social worker, substance use specialist, bedside registered nurse, licensed midwife, advanced practice midwife, or some people might call them lay or community midwives, a family practice obstetrical provider, and OBGYN providers. So the type of information that we draw is much different. It clarifies what happened. It's not your traditional vital statistics type information that really doesn't delve into what's happening on the ground. The participants are from many locations across the state. The MMRC takes the confidentiality of these records very seriously and uses multiple steps to ensure the privacy of the statements of the patients and the families to make sure they're appreciated. The primary cost that we have is the clerical folks who have to track down all of these records from across the state, multiple venues, and try to assemble it in an unidentified way for our team.
If you could wrap up your testimony, it would be appreciated.
Sure. All right. To date, the MMRC has reviewed over many maternal deaths. And I think one of the next things that I would like to emphasize is the fact that for every death that we see, it's been found that probably near misses, otherwise, you know, known as people who have very serious morbidity from their childbirth, et cetera, are out there as well, too. Anywhere from 50 to 100 per death is what can actually be estimated on that.
That was Idaho Maternal Mortality Review Committee Chair Stacy Seib testifying in February. Idaho Health Department Public Health Administrator Elke Shaw Tulloch said at the hearing, "Idaho is a state that cares about mothers and babies. We want them to receive the best health care and community services from parental care through delivery as well as the postpartum period." The work of the Idaho Maternal Mortality Review Committee, or MMRC, not only helps improve these services for Idaho moms and babies, but also improves health outcomes, leading to whole and healthy families. Here's Elke Shaw Tulloch testifying in February.
Having the Idaho-specific MMRC allows the identification of factors contributing to these tragic outcomes in our state that helps these analysis and recommendations remain local and allows for timely and collaborative action at the state and local level. Comprehensive authority and protections codified in this statute are the cornerstone of the MMRC. Without them, the MMRC cannot carry out key functions of public health importance. As dictated in the statute, the MMRC keeps all personally identifiable information strictly confidential, even from the MMRC members. No individual healthcare providers are identified, and no data that would identify the mother is released to the public. All MMRC members are required to sign a confidentiality agreement. Every year, the MMRC develops the Maternal Deaths in Idaho Annual Report, as previously mentioned, that provides an overview of the cases and the factors that contributed to the deaths. Importantly, the report also includes recommendations at the patient, provider, facility, system, and community level for steps that can be taken to prevent this type of death from happening again. Two examples of the MMRC recommendations coming to fruition are legislation currently circulating that establishes 12 months of postpartum medical coverage, also the establishment of a statewide perinatal quality collaborative to help shepherd these recommendations made by the MMRC. Importantly, the MMRC's actions are not only to prevent future deaths, but also help reduce instances of maternal morbidity, which is 100 times more common than a pregnancy-related death. MMRCs can also reduce the number of pregnancies that require extended hospitalizations or other specialty care, playing a critical role in improving health outcomes for all Idaho mothers and their babies by reducing healthcare costs. There is no fiscal impact in that our division's ongoing long-standing maternal child health block grant, which has maximum flexibility for us, provides the funds, and we make this a top priority for our funds. And I've been working with the Division of Public Health for 27 years, and for the entire time that I've been here, we've had this block grant, and we've been able to utilize these funds to address the priorities that we have in Idaho.
That was Idaho Health Department Public Health Administrator Elke Shaw Tulloch. Dr. Suzanne Hubley also testified to the Health and Welfare Committee in February.
I'm a family physician practicing full-spectrum family medicine, including OB in Weezer, Idaho. I'm speaking today as the immediate past president of the Idaho Academy of Family Physicians to testify in support of House Bill 81 that removes the sunset date on the maternal mortality review committee and allows the work of this critical committee to continue in perpetuity. The Idaho Academy of Family Physicians represents nearly 800 family physicians statewide. Our mission is to empower family physicians to improve the health of patients and communities. Since its establishment in 2019, Idaho's MMRC has comprehensively reviewed the deaths of Idaho women during or within 1 year of pregnancy. The multidisciplinary committee has then made critical recommendations to prevent future deaths. As a family medicine doctor practicing OB in rural Idaho, I can personally attest to the value of this review and recommendation process. We had a recent case within the last couple of years where a young woman, mid-20s, fifth pregnancy, was deemed to be high risk and established care. Unfortunately, she was unable to hook up with high-risk physicians and ultimately ended up delivering somewhere else. Following that delivery via C-section, which was a repeat C-section, she developed a blood clot in her lungs, was seen by a couple of physicians following that, first in the emergency room and then with primary, ultimately ended up back in the emergency room and was transferred to the other side of the state due to inability of bed unavailability, and ultimately died. This is just one case where if we had had review and comprehensive review of all of the people involved in the case, we can look back and see if there was anything that we could have done to prevent this death.
That was OB and full-spectrum family physician Suzanne Hubley of Weezer testifying remotely during the February hearing on a bill from Republican Representative Dori Healy of Boise to extend the work of an Idaho Maternal Mortality Review Committee indefinitely rather than let the committee sunset after 3 years. Despite this, the Health and Welfare Committee tabled a vote on whether to renew the committee, and the bill never came before the Idaho House after Representative Healy withdrew it. Well, that's it for the KRFP evening report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms tonight, mostly cloudy, low 51, mostly clear tomorrow and Tuesday night, high 82, low 53, partly cloudy Wednesday and Wednesday night, high 80, low 51, and sunny, high 79 on Thursday, currently 66 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843, or you can go to the KRFP.org website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. There you can adopt a DJ. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can also use a PayPal option, and there's a Patreon button. And we'll also accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. Also on the website, you can stream KRFP and listen to the two-week archive of all shows broadcast on KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Flashpoints is up next, and then we'll have music, so stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored in part by Hunga Dunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Hunga Dunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers at hungadungabrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram. KRFP programming is also sponsored by
Mikey's Euros, specializing in Greek and Middle Eastern cuisine, such as gyros, falafel, hummus, and tabbouleh, located at 527 South Main Street in Moscow.